4 years of civil war in Syria have produced a wave of millions of refugees. Most have sought protection in neighboring countries like Turkey, but increasingly many Syrian refugees are heading for Europe, even if it means risking their lives to cross the Mediterranean on an overcrowded smuggler's boat. That's what 15-year-old Nora Sukta did. He fled Damascus. Photojournalist Mackenzie Knowles-Corson documented his travel. He says he first met Noras as the boy stepped off the boat in the Italian port town of Augusta in Sicily.
He was told by smugglers in Turkey, where he left, that he was going to be at sea for maybe 4 or 5 days. They said it was a direct boat straight to the southern coast of Italy. The boat ended up stopping off of Egypt to pick up more migrants there and then off the coast of Libya. So it was a journey that ended up taking 11 days in all. In his words, he had said, basically, you're at their mercy. I mean, once you get on the boat, you really just end up praying that both the boat doesn't sink and then that they're actually going to take you where they say they are.
And we should point out that his journey actually started 3 years ago when he decided to leave Damascus. Why did he want to go to Sweden?
Sweden's a pretty unique country in the sense that it gives de facto asylum status to Syrian refugees. It also has pretty good immigration services and then, good social services in comparison with other countries like Italy and Greece. And that's typically because of something called the Dublin Regulation in the EU, which mandates that wherever an asylum seeker first lands in Europe, if they register for asylum there, then they're basically tethered to that country.
It's funny, just listening to you describe this, I find it confusing. And I imagine for a kid who arrives in Sicily at 15 years old, and then they've got to figure out what to do and where to go. How hard is that for a kid like Noras?
He was, in some ways, flying by the seat of his pants, like everybody was, because you didn't know what was going to happen around the next turn. You didn't know how diligent authorities were going to be in trying to register you. You didn't know whether you were going to meet a police officer that, for one reason or another, was just going to take you in and try and get you to register for asylum.
Right. And you describe kind of this weird act that these migrants need to play when they arrive in a place like Italy. They've got to play along with the authorities, but they don't really want to stay in Italy, do they?
Totally, totally. I mean, it's a big song and dance, I think, both for refugees and for authorities. When they first arrived in Sicily, there was Italian anti-terrorism police that were there and big guns and, big Kevlar jackets and big boots and very intimidating. And they guided the refugees across this long parking lot, basically, to their reception center. And they had cars that followed them and made sure that they all walked in line and kept a very vigilant eye on them. But the flip side of that is that they know that once they transfer them to a sort of holding camp that night, they know that those who want to and those who have the means to are going to leave the camp because it's left basically unguarded. And the next morning, Naudas, as well as about a dozen other Syrian guys, met at the train station in the town of Catania, where I met them. And then we hopped on a train and traveled north, first to Naples and then to Milan.
How did Noras get from Milan to Stockholm?
He ended up flying from there. He had a Syrian passport, which not all Syrian refugees have, obviously. So he was able to board a plane.
Now, you were with Noras on that flight, so 3 years after leaving Damascus, he's getting really close to his final destination. What was he feeling? What were his emotions like?
When we got on the plane, I mean, everybody was all smiles. There were probably, I'd say, 15 other people that were refugees, Palestinians, Syrians, that were on the plane with us, and we took off, and people were, they were really happy. Noras was, he was all smiles, and people hugged and clapped hands and that sort of stuff, filled with a bunch of other Swedish people who didn't quite know what was going on. But it was a sight.
You know, this is way more than just a journey, more than a trek. It's just so intense and so many people have died on these trips. What did you draw from your experience following Noras along his journey? And what did you take away from it?
Man, I took a number of different things away. I think spending time with these guys and seeing their journey and hearing their stories, and hearing just the total destruction that they had to flee, with absolutely no choice. I mean, it was either die in Syria or try and get somewhere else.
That was photojournalist Mackenzie Knowles-Corson there. And to see those incredibly intimate photos of Nora Sukta's journey, we have them up on our website, pri.org.